And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, www.freakradio.org, on Thursday, February 4th. I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy, just to make sure that you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, all that information that you'll need to take action. Let's start with announcements. The Earth First Journal announces that the Winter Earth First newsletter is out. The current issue of the Earth First News is now available and includes updates and actions in defense of Mother Earth from October through December 2015, as well as a feature on the direct actionistas in Canada shutting down pipelines, updated prisoner pages, including arrestees facing charges, and our current Eco Action Group directory. The Earth First News is a great way to keep up with those who don't have internet access, like prisoners and tree sitters, in the loop of eco-resistance. You can view the news online or download it in print copies for your local info shop, school library, coffee spot, whatever or wherever would-be radicals might be seeking spiritual guidance. To find the Earth First newsletter, go to www.earthfirstjournal.org. That's earthfirstjournal.org. And announcing ACTERRA Stewardship's newest habitat restoration projects. They're going to be having a project this Saturday, February 6th, from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at Hawthorne's. The address is 4411 Alpine Road in Portola Valley, and it's a free event. For more information and how to register for ACTERRA's stewardship program, go to their website, www.acterra.org. That's ACTERRA.org. And reminding you, the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action is coming up February 15th through the 21st. Join the Buffalo Field Campaign in Montana for their Week of Action. They're planning a whole variety of events between February 15th and Sunday, March 21st. If you want more information about the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action, go to their webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, and have a lot of fun up there. And now for one of those things I don't like to do, but you really ought to know. In memoriam is Sylvia McLaughlin. The San Francisco Bay Area lost an environmental leader last month with the death of Sylvia McLaughlin at the age of 99. Sylvia was the founder of Save San Francisco Bay Association, which is now Save the Bay, in the early 1960s, which in many ways was the kickoff to local conservation movements. Sylvia and two other women were appalled by plans to fill in San Francisco Bay, not leaving much more than a shipping channel, so they decided to do something about it. They didn't completely stop everything, but the pace slowed down considerably and people came to recognize the value of keeping the bay natural. Eventually, the State Bay Conservation and Development Commission was formed to oversee the management of the entire San Francisco Bay shoreline. In the course of her career, Sylvia occupied several appointed positions, including seats on the Alameda County Board of Supervisors Advisory Planning Commission and on the Berkeley City Council Waterfront Advisory Commission. She sat on Save the Bay's Board of Directors for almost 40 years and on the Board of Directors for the National Audubon Society, East Bay Conservation Corps, Save the Redwoods League, Citizens for East Shore Parks, Trust for Public Land, Greenbelt Alliance, and many others. In addition to Save the Bay, she co-founded Urban Care, a Berkeley group, and Citizens for East Shore Parks. In later years, Sylvia remained involved. In 2007, she famously occupied an oak tree at UC Berkeley to protest the removal of the grove of trees in the way of a new football stadium complex. She also devoted her efforts to creating parks along the east shore of the bay, and in 2012, one of them was named for her, the McLaughlin East Shore State Park. Unfortunately passed away at the age of 99, Sylvia McLaughlin. If you want more information about her or other actions in the East Bay, go to www.caluwild.org, that's caluwild.org, or www.savesfbay.org. And here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. The hunting frenzy in the Gardner Basin is escalating. More than 330 Yellowstone bison have been killed in this year's hunt. Buffalo families continue to be gunned down and wiped out along the northern border of Yellowstone National Park. This killing furor is a result of the buffalo management agencies to have hunters reduce the population as much as possible. One of the four tribes hunting under treaty rights, as well as a few state hunters, have decided not to honor the already weak hunting closure at Beatty Gulch. This choke point migration corridor is almost a certain death sentence for wild buffalo who move through there. Hunters blast into buffalo family groups as soon as they migrate across the park boundary, many hunters not even knowing which buffalo have already been shot. Numerous buffalo have been hit, run back into Yellowstone or away from the patchwork of hunting areas, sending park rangers or game wardens out to mercy kill the wounded and return their bodies to the hunting parties, rewarding their irresponsible actions. Tensions are rising between hunters, community members, law enforcement, and bison advocates. Even state wildlife officials and tribal game wardens are expressing disgust at the way the current hunt is being carried out. Those who participate in the killing are responsible for their individual actions, for the cumulative impacts of every buffalo life that is taken. Hunters have the responsibility to ensure the long-term survival of the animals they hunt and should be fighting for more habitat and more buffalo on a larger landscape. The arguments used to justify the killing, overpopulation, or brucellosis, all ring hollow. There is no such thing as surplus wild buffalo. In fact, the species is red-listed by the International Union for the Conservation of Nature as threatened with near extinction. Even the state of Montana recognizes that they are vulnerable to global extinction. There has never been a single case of bison-to-cattle brucellosis transmission outside of a laboratory setting. The livestock industry's political anti-buffalo campaign is driving the slaughter, all of it based on lies, prejudice, and intolerance. Journalist Chris Ketchum and Buffalo Field Campaign's media coordinator Stephanie Shea will have their first day in court tomorrow, Friday, February 5th, when the United States District Court in Casper, Wyoming, hears arguments for a preliminary injunction to halt the planned Yellowstone National Park bison cull. Ketchum and Shea are represented by the Animal Legal Defense Fund, University of Denver Constitutional Law Professors, and Jamie M. Woolsey of the private Wyoming law firm Fuller, Sandifer & Associates, LLC. The capture and kill operation is scheduled to start on February 15th. If you'd like more information about the Buffalo Field Campaign, go to their website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you'd like to send them a donation, send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Or you can give them a call, see what they need at 406-646-0070. Once again, that webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org, where you can find out all of this information and more. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And the Seal Guardian Campaign update from Hunt Saboteurs Association. This is from the Hunt Saboteurs Association, as found on the Earth First Newswire. For those of you who were following the Hunt Saboteurs Association Seal Guardian campaign, which spanned 2014 and 15 and was HSA's longest-running full-time campaign, being a daily operation covering 6 months last summer, we have an amazing update to share. The Scottish government have finally formally announced a 3-year ban on coastal wild salmon netting in Scotland. This is a major victory because with no nets in the water, Usan Salmon Fisheries, also known as the Scottish Wild Salmon Company, can't claim to need to shoot seals in order to protect those salmon nets. Usan have been shooting seals for 4 decades, so this is truly a landmark victory. History has been made, and there's more. The coastal netting ban means that wild salmon can now travel up and down the east coast without running the gauntlet of 14 nets in a 10-mile stretch of coast to get to their home rivers for breeding. Tens of thousands of salmon will be saved. Also, as was well documented by us, protecting seabirds using their traditional breeding and nesting grounds in and around the Montrose Basin were routinely drowning in the salmon nets as a result of their feeder wings getting caught. They can now exist in peace, free from the life-threatening hazards where the coastal salmon nets. So this win is a huge result for seals, the seabirds, and the salmon. The Scottish government was under pressure from the European Union to halt coastal salmon netting because salmon numbers are at an all-time low. They were talking about making a decision within the next 5 years. With evidence gathered by us and submitted to relevant authorities and stakeholders, along with awareness raising and media interest that we created, was forcing a change now. This leaves USAN with the creel pot side of their business. Since the salmon season closed last autumn, expecting repercussions for their behavior, they were charged with netting out of permitted hours and also got a huge fine from the HMRC for not declaring all of their catch. They have increased the creel pot side of the business in lieu of their lost salmon business. They have increased the number of pots that they usually sink tenfold, going after the crabs and lobsters of the East Coast. They have tried to argue that they still need to shoot seals, this time to protect their creel pots, but so far they have not been issued a license for that. It is ridiculous, as seals cannot rip into the creel pots, but as Kevin Pular himself said, they just love killing seals, so it doesn't surprise us that they will try for any excuse to continue to do so. We will, of course, fight them all the way on obtaining a license to shoot protected creel pots. The only other interest they have now is the Ethon River fishing rights. A well-established seal population hauls out at the Ethon, and there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to have this haul-out site awarded protection. Results for this are imminent. We have more legal stuff against the Pulars of USAN and their pals in the pipeline, and we'll update you on when these cases are able. We continue to work with various agencies, stakeholders, and locals to ensure the best permanent result for the wildlife of Scotland's coasts. And you can find the Earth First Newswire at www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And now another article on the story about Greenpeace saying that seal hunting is sustainable. In this back and forth written by Captain Paul Watson, entitled Where Does Greenpeace Stand on Seal Hunting by John Bergwald, which was issued January 21st. The article was originally published in Greenpeace Denmark, and Paul Watson has responded line by line. Starting off with Greenpeace Director John Bergwald's statement, Greenpeace is completely against the commercial hunting of seals for profit. We always will be. Captain Paul Watson's response, unless the commercial sealing operation pretends to be indigenous. When a seal pelt is processed by a factory for sale in Asia or Europe, that is all the proof needed that the product is commercial. John Bergwald stated loud and clear, it is time to move on, and I quote, I think it's great also, we need to move beyond the notion that all sealing and seal products are a bad thing. I think it's good that we can start promoting sustainable seal products. That was a statement by John Bergwald. When asked if it was okay to wear seal products, it's true, it's a sustainable hunt, it's a very sustainable way of hunting. Bergwald went on to say that he thinks it is good that Greenpeace can start to promote sustainable seal products. Now, being in favor of killing seals is bad enough, but when Bergwald says that Greenpeace intends to promote seal products, Captain Paul Watson fails to see what possible justification that Greenpeace can have for not only endorsing seal products, but for also promoting seal products. Greenpeace Director John Bergwald. Late last year, I was interviewed about Greenpeace's position on seal hunting by the American news channel MSNBC. I think it's important to clarify where we stand on this important subject. Greenpeace is completely against the commercial hunting of seals for profit. We always will be. But the large-scale commercial hunt is a world away from the traditional practices of indigenous peoples in the Arctic. In fact, indigenous communities have shown time and again that they understand how to protect the Arctic ecosystem they call home, and their hunting practices have never been a threat to seals or whale populations. They do not hunt seal pups, and their hunt is conducted with respect for the animal. They hunt because it is a critical way to sustain themselves and their families in the harsh Arctic environment. Paul Watson's response. Come on, John, you were speaking directly to the marketing of seal fur as fashion. When we see a fashion model traipsing down the runway displaying a seal fur jacket, you are asking us to believe that she needs that jacket to survive the harsh Arctic environment. Once seal fur leaves the environments of the Arctic to be worn in Tokyo, Beijing, or strangely even in Dubai, it can no longer be classified as indigenous. There is nothing indigenous, cultural, or traditional about marketing fur to wealthy people in climates outside the Arctic. When fashion designers like Stella McCartney and Vivienne Westwood denounce fur in fashion, why would Greenpeace even think of promoting it? Back in the 80s, at an international meeting of fur and whaling industry executives in Iceland, the Canadian Department of Fisheries proposed a marketing scheme to counter anti-fur and anti-whaling protests by linking their industry to indigenous communities to present the illusion that the product is both cultural and sustainable. It is that lie that seems to have seduced even Greenpeace. Nobody, not Greenpeace, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, or any other organization has ever campaigned against Inuit communities. But Canadian federal monies are pumped into Inuit communities to enlist them in the defense of the commercial sealing industry. The government of Canada says that baby seals are no longer slaughtered. That depends, of course, on your definition of a baby seal, which the government now claims is a seal older than 3 weeks. They may be helpless on the ice, unable to swim, and their survival skills unlearned, but a redefinition according to the industry now defines them as adults. When indigenous people are employed by commercial interests, their killing for the industry can no longer be considered indigenous. The Great Greenland Fur Tannery sells millions of euros of seal and polar bear fur every year. This is not subsistence, it is a commercial business. In an article by Kevin McGuinn, published November 11, 2015, on the World Policy blog, provided more insight. Despite everything the organization has done to express its support for indigenous sealing in recent years, most people still seem to be caught off guard when John Bergwald, a Danish Greenpeace Arctic campaigner, appeared wearing a sealskin vest. The vest was a gift to Greenpeace, presented to Bergwald by Great Greenland, a tannery, after he explained during a report broadcast on MSNBC, an American news outlet, that it was never Greenpeace's intention to damage the livelihoods of indigenous hunters. Bergwald admits that the comments and wearing of the vest are part of Greenpeace's efforts to own up to its mistakes, but he underscores that the organization supports sealing primarily because it is, quote, the right thing to do. This is sometimes that it is good for our relationship to the people of the North, but it's not the way to win new members. The Great Greenland Tannery is not some little cottage business. It is a major exporter of seal and polar bear fur. It is a commercial enterprise, supplying the demand for the fashion industry. By accepting a vest worth 750 euros and publicly wearing it, Bergwald is sending a clear message that Greenpeace endorses commercial sealing. But as Bergwald clearly stated, supporting sealing is the right thing to do. What really makes me angry is that Bergwald states that the Greenpeace seal campaigns of the past, initiated and organized by myself and others, were a mistake. They may be a mistake to incorporate Greenpeace today, but who we led and participated in those campaigns have no apologies for the success of our activism. Our efforts brought about the collapse of the commercial sea fur market, and we are damn proud of the results. My crew and I were beaten, jailed, dragged through frozen Labrador waters, fined, and prosecuted in Greenpeace's name, and Bergwald dismisses our efforts today as a mistake. Greenpeace Director John Bergwald, we respect their right to continue this tradition, and by their right, he means the indigenous Indians and Inuits. Captain Paul Watson's reply, this statement implies that anyone opposed to the marketing of seal fur does not respect the rights of indigenous communities. Greenpeace Director John Bergwald, I visited many communities in the Arctic over the last decade and have seen how both indigenous peoples conduct the hunt and how extremely important it is for them. It is not just a matter of culture, it is a matter of survival. Many indigenous communities in the far north rely on seal products for food, warmth, and clothing. They sell some of these products so they can sustain their livelihoods and keep their families alive through the harsh Arctic winter. Captain Paul Watson's response, once again, Bergwald implies that seal fur products marketed outside the Arctic are a necessity for the survival of indigenous peoples. He paints a pretty picture of the Inuit hunter depending on the seal for survival, and this associates with the image of the hunter with his sled dog, handmade bone spear, patiently waiting for hours before a hole in the ice and sub-zero temperatures waiting for the seal to deliver itself to him. The reality is a hunter on a snowmobile or a powerboat with a high-powered rifle and a scope shooting seals from a distance and hauling dozens and dozens of pelts back at a time on a sled pulled by his snowmobile. The odds for seals and polar bears have changed dramatically. Greenpeace director John Bergwald. On the other hand, the Canadian government continues to allow the killing of upwards of 500,000 seal pups a year. This government has a long history of sacrificing the health of our oceans for the short-term interests of the fishing and sealing industry. This is why we started our sealing campaign in the 1970s and why we still oppose the commercial hunt. Captain Paul Watson. First of all, John, you did not start the Greenpeace seal campaigns in the 70s. I did. You were not there, and thus you speculate about the reasons Greenpeace then, as I do now, opposed the entire commercial fur industry. When seal fur is marketed, it becomes commercial, and that is exactly what you are endorsing in your interview. Today, Canada sets a quota of over 40,000 seals each year, but the kill is lower than 20% because of the work of anti-sealing groups that have undermined the markets in most of the world. Canada needs the association with Indigenous traditions to continue to push for the reopening of the markets. For example, the European Union offered the Inuit an exception, but the Inuit, under the direction of the Government of Canada, refused this exemption and refused to dissociate the Indigenous hunt from the commercial one. We need to continue to undermine the lobbying of the fur industry, especially the sealing industry, and your statements are ammunition for that industry. Just like Patrick Moore did when he betrayed Greenpeace principles to sell out to the nuclear, GMO, and chemical industries, you are now doing the same for the fur industry. John Bergwald. But when Greenpeace and others campaigned against the seal hunt in the 1970s and 80s, we didn't adequately distinguish between the inhumane and cruel industrial hunt and the traditional one. The results were devastating to many Arctic indigenous communities. Hunting and fishing in this harsh landscape is, for many, their only means of survival. Captain Paul Watson. Again, what do you mean by we, John? We did indeed distinguish between indigenous hunting and commercial hunting, and you would know that if you were there, but again, you weren't there. There never has been a campaign to target traditional Inuit communities. We oppose the Canadian and Norwegian commercial hunts, and not a single Indigenous person living a traditional lifestyle was involved in that activity then, nor are they today. I fail to see how it was devastating to Arctic Indigenous communities. They continued to kill seals without interference for food and clothing. What they could no longer do was supply fur to the commercial markets. And it was through the Inuit communities that the fur industry secured Arctic fox, polar bear, and other species that they could no longer legally exploit themselves. The destructive fur trade that began with the Hudson's Bay and Northwest companies in the 18th century was fueled by recruitment of Native American communities to supply the furs that they marketed to Europeans. Whereas Native Americans were not a major threat to wildlife populations, their alliance with the European fur companies devastated beaver and otter populations and drove other species like sea mink to extinction. Greenpeace director John Bergwald. Greenpeace is campaigning to protect marine mammals across the world, including critically endangered species like the vaquita, Maui's dolphin, and Okinawa dugong. We're also tackling some of the huge global issues that affect their survival, like overfishing, ocean pollution, and acidification. We will never stop campaigning for healthy, clear oceans or supporting the rights of Indigenous peoples everywhere. Captain Paul Watson's response. Sea Shepherd has two vessels in the Gulf of Cortez currently working in cooperation with the Mexican Navy. This is the second year of Operation Milagro. Greenpeace is not there. Greenpeace does not oppose the slaughter of pilot whales in the Danish Faroe Islands, nor the massacre of dolphins in Japan. Greenpeace has not sent a ship to the Southern Ocean to defend whales since 2007. Greenpeace does good work on numerous issues, but refuses to address important factors contributing to the destruction of life in the ocean and contributing to climate change. Things like industrial fish consumption and meat production. Greenpeace refused to be interviewed for the film Cowspiracy for fear of alienating their meat-eating supporters. Greenpeace has taken the position that there is sustainable fisheries and sustainable logging and refuses to acknowledge that 7.5 billion people cannot allow for sustainable exploitation. There is simply no such thing as sustainable exploitation of wild species presently under assault by escalating consumer demands. There is no necessity for an industrial fur industry, and when fur coats are marketed to the public, the word sustainable used in that context is absurd. Greenpeace Director John Bergwald, I'm hugely grateful to all of our supporters who continue to make this work possible. Captain Paul Watson, I would think, John, you would be losing a great many supporters who will not agree with Greenpeace endorsing commercial sealing with the lie that it is sustainable. Greenpeace needs to do some damage control here, and that involves sacking John Bergwald and issuing a statement that Greenpeace is absolutely 100% opposed to the commercial trade in fur, with an acknowledgement that fur is not a sustainable product, nor can it be described even remotely as eco-friendly. And in a final note, John Bergwald has taken pains to delete any online pictures of himself wearing seal fur, but two pictures can still be found online, expose John Bergwald as the sea fur-loving traitor to Greenpeace and the seals that he is, and tweets from Bergwald shared with Nuah Bianco, a marketing director for the Great Greenland Tannery Company, speak for themselves. And you can find all of this and more at www.seashepherd.org. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. for a rebroadcast as part of Environment Friday. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, tune in to KRFP Radio Free Moscow at 90.3 FM, where you can hear the Earth First Update at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays. You can hear the Earth First Update occasionally on Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC Boston, Massachusetts, also on 90.3 FM from 6 to 10 a.m. on Sundays, somewhere in that time span. And you can listen online to Grateful Dread Public Radio, an internet radio station, Sundays at 2 a.m. Their URL is gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org. And you can also find them on tunein.com and spotify.com. You can listen online or download the Earth First Update at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. And it is free for them to download. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced by Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.